This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. It's time for Place to Be Nation's Year in Pop. Each episode, we go back in time to a year in the past and take a trip down memory lane and see what was going on in the worlds of news, sports, and pop culture with your hosts, Andy Atherton and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the Year in Pop right here on the PTBN Pop Feed. I'm your co-host, Andy Atherton. Thank you for joining us tonight. We have another great year, starting to get into that fresh memories. You know, we're starting to get a little older and starting to get closer to where our formative years were starting. So let's get to talk about it. But first, I got to bring in my co-host. He is the co-host on The Main Event and the co-host on the Place to Be podcast over on the Wrestling Feed. He has been doing a great series of Pop Goes the Classics lately here on the Pop Feed, Mr. Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you tonight?
Good evening, Mr. Atherton, and it is indeed a wonderful evening, and the feeds are flying here in this October. And tonight, once again, like I said in the last episode, we are definitely entering one of the better years of everything in history, pop culture. I feel like I had said before, our first like four episodes, 73 to 76, I feel like we're just kind of getting going. We had some good stuff here, good stuff there. And then, of course, our last episode, which got a lot of downloads. So we thank you, Place to Be Nation, for those clicks. 1977 was a tremendous episode. It was one of the more memorable years of the last, 40 years. And I think tonight we have just as equally a tremendous year. So why don't we bring in the rest of our team and dive right in?
All right. He is the co-host on This Week in the NFL. You can hear him also on the Place to Be podcast and various and other shows here on the Place to Be Nation Pop Feed. Also, one of the co-hosts of the Extreme 308 Dance. Didn't want to leave that one out. Mr. J.R. Sunil D'Amato. Johnny, how are you tonight?
Good evening, boys. Pleasure to be with you. Not bad. G's all right, but as far as the co-hosts go... one's a born liar and the other's convicted. Other than that, we'll try to get through this.
Well, let me bring in that fourth guy on the team. He is a veteran here at Place to Be Nation, former co-host of The Extra Point of Sports Evolution. He a frequent contributor to The Main Event. And tonight we're going back to... when he was on a plane because the capos told him to go take care of some guys at the zoo because the retards like the zoo. The doctor, Dr. G, George Plano. This was like at the time when, you shook down guys at, like in Goodfellas, they went down to the Tampa Zoo. You went down to the freaking Coral Gables Zoo, right? Shook down the freaking meathead.
I don't know. You just made things up.
You like that? Is there such a thing as the Coral Gables Zoo? I don't even know.
No, but it's okay. It sounds good anyway.
Well, my University of Miami.
Scott, just so you know.
Well, you know what? Notre Dame thought that University of Miami was nothing but a zoo. So, anyway. All right. Dr. G, everybody. All right. Of course, Andy, you know what we're doing tonight. We are entering another tremendous year. We bring you 1978.
That's right. The 70s are almost done. We only got one more to go after this. And there's times are changing, I think. You see trends in every one of our categories. You see tendencies. It's a new world, as they would say, or it's a new day, possibly. But
yes, it is.
But 78. Let's quickly, as we always like to start the show off, really just go over stats really quick. Average cost of a new house jumped to about $5,000. 54,800 from 49,300. Your average income per year went up 2,000 from 15 to 17,000. Your average monthly rent went up $20 to $260. Gallon of gas went down 2 cents to 63 cents, and the inflation rate kept rising back to 7.62%. So, you know, we're in the middle of the Carter administration. You know, we'll see what happens as the decade is coming to a close. But in the world of pop culture, we had a lot of popular toys back then. We had auto racing sets, of course, were big. Air hockey was very popular, as seen in like movies like The Band of Bears. Barbie was still huge with the ladies. You know, Kinect 4, Erector sets. You know, those were, I probably told this story on another show or whatever, but, you know, those still come in handy today because I don't know if you guys have ever been to Epcot down in Florida, but when they were coming up with Soarin' and they were trying to come up with the vehicle design, the lead Imagineer actually was home at Thanksgiving, I think at his parents' house, and dug out his old Erector set, and he actually built what turned out to be the vehicle that the system they use for Soarin'. So, yeah, so if you ever go there, just think, you know, this was designed with an old Erector set. Hungry Hungry Hippos was popular. That's still today. They still have those. It's
Man, you saw a lot of Hungry Hippos at the Big E, right, Andy?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, I did. Trust me.
The last Rosati sister was serving, was selling fried butter. That's why she died.
Oh, my God. There's as awesome as the gastronomy creations are up there. The people watching is equally as fun. Trust me.
He can't stand that much New England around him.
Yeah, it's luckily I just kind of close my ears off so I don't have to listen to Wicked Had all day.
You talked about all the feeds on the network. There were a lot of feeds at the Big E.
A lot of feed lines.
They were drinking the Crisco. They weren't even bothering to eat the donuts.
New England's best, baby.
The term "a lid for every pot" comes to mind. Trust me. I love the you know the father pushing the stroller with the beer in the cup holder. That's one of my favorite parts. Or the two parents who are vaping as they push a stroller. That was another good one. And also, you remember that something is legal in Massachusetts that's not legal in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So you smelled that quite a bit.
Yep.
But getting back to the games, though, based on the great hit movie from 76, the Jaws game. You guys remember the handheld games? You know, Merlin, the electronic wizard. I think I still have a Merlin at my parents' house. It's, of course, like every other game, it's missing the Barry back. Like, yeah.
They always snap off it. You had to get tape or whatever. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To hold it in. I had, like, all the handheld, like, the football games mm-hmm. and the baseball games and all that, too.
Hockey. Yeah, they sell them now, too. They came back. Like, for, like, $15, you can buy, like, the old, you know, that's new. But it's, like, the old-style football and all that stuff.
Awesome.
Nerf Rockets. Pinball games were popular. Scooters were coming out. Here we go. Sean Cassidy phonograph with sing-along mic. I know D'Amato had one of those, right?
He was in the Hardy's Boys.
Yeah. Simon Says. That was very aggravating sometimes when you get that. Tycho.
That's Simon, right? That's Simon Says. Not Simon the big, those circle with the big buttons, right?
I think it might have been called Simon Says originally. Yeah,
that was just Simon. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Oh, we had that.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Also coming out that year, the first official Garfield, comic strip was published in June of that year. Jim Davis, the cartoonist, created the life of a lazy and often sarcastic cat named Garfield that loved lasagna. And, you know, Odie was the rival, the pet dog, and lots of books. Garfield today is still in there. You guys Garfield guys?
Yeah, I love Garfield.
Yeah, I did too.
I occasionally. I wasn't like a big, big fan of it.
Yeah, G is not a cat person.
Neither am I.
Yeah, but he liked lasagna, Scott.
That's true, yeah.
Garfield dead.
That too.
That's the kind of cat you could like, a fat fuck who likes lasagna.
G's on a roll. Jay's on a roll tonight. Not G, sorry about that. Jay's on a roll tonight, I'll tell you.
He is.
He is.
All right. All right. All right. Well, a little more serious. Roman Polanski, he fled to France in February that year, just hours before he was to be formally sentenced for the rape and other charges against a child. So yeah, that was not a fun. A positive though, I mean, this might go in. We'll talk about this a little more in the news section later on. But the Nobel Peace Prize is awarded to Egyptian President Anwar al-Sadat and Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin during October of that year. They were awarded the prize for their work on the Camp David Accords, which had been agreed upon during the previous month. Mm-hmm. The Illinois Bell Company introduced the first ever cellular mobile phone system. Space Invaders launched, and it was a craze for computer video games. That's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're starting, things like starting to see games, probably Missile Command, Asteroids. Those all probably came not too long after.
Yep.
The first.
I think television is getting started soon.
Yeah, and television, well, for the home, yeah. Yeah, Space Invaders was in the arcade back then, and I don't think Pac-Man was around yet, but this was like, I remember Asteroids, because Asteroids is very basic. It's just lines, basically, and blips.
Yeah, yeah. Good game, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of fun. You could play that for hours. Actually, there's no real point to just don't
really end.
Don't hit it. Don't hit anything. That's all there is to it.
Don't let the pieces hit you when you blow something up.
Mm-hmm. The first computer bulletin board system, BBS, is created, and 98% of all American homes now have a television. I don't know what those other 2% are doing, but you know, get on it. Come on.
Fireside radio. It's like a place to be nation.
It's like going to, they're still living in the 50s. Ma, what you got there? We're not going to watch them talking pictures. All right. So some notable deaths. Hubert H. Humphrey, the former governor. John Cazal, who is a, talked about often here on the Place to Be Nation on the Year in Pop, actually. One of your guys, he was in, what is this guy? He was in three straight.
He was in five straight movies. He was in Godfather 1. He was in Godfather 2. He was in Dog Day Afternoon. He was in The Conversation. And he was in The Deer Hunter. Only guy ever to be in which his first five movies, and in this case, his only five movies, all Best Picture nominations. All of them. All five. Was not in a shitty movie.
Wow.
It's amazing. And he was dying. He pretty much had cancer towards the tail end of, I think he barely made it to the premiere of The Deer Hunter, which came out around this year, came out in 78. And he was dead. He was actually going out with Meryl Streep at the time. Yeah. But think about it. He was Fredo. He was, he was one of Gene Hackman's guys in The Conversation. He was Al Pacino's partner, robbing the bank in Dog Day Afternoon. And of course, he was in The Deer Hunter. So, I mean, an amazing actor, left us way too soon, and literally five movies. He was only in five movies, and all five were Best Picture nominees. I mean, no one will ever bat 1,000 again. No one, like he did. It's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
Those will likely all be Pop Goes the Classics down the line. All five. I'll watch all five of those. And I any of you guys, I'd love for you to join me. All five of those deserve to be talked about because they're obviously the two Godfathers, but. The Conversation is one of those movies that came out earlier. We talked about it on an earlier episode. Gene Hackman, they were surveillance guys, like bug. They bugged rooms for the government, and they were a private firm, and they were listening about assassinations. It was really good. And then obviously the two Godfathers. Dog Day Afternoon is one of those movies that you don't really think about, but it was probably one of Al Pacino's best. You've seen that one, right, G? You've seen Dog Day Afternoon, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know, Johnny, you have. Andy, have you ever seen Dog Day Afternoon?
I think I did. I think that was during my catch-up phase, but it was like, it's all a blur.
That's a tremendous movie. And, of course, The Deer Hunter, tremendous as well. So very sad, very tough loss in the Hollywood world.
Yeah, it was only around 42.
Five for five. Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy was batting 5 for 5. Amazing.
Of the famous Wallenda family, Carl Wallenda died on a high wire accident. He fell to
his... Go wait for a flying Wallenda to go. He might as well go that way.
Yeah. Right? Here's another. Here's an unsolved Hollywood death. Bob Crane of Hogan's Heroes fame. He was found murdered in his...
Vegas.
Yeah, in a hotel
Phoenix?
Room. Yeah, no, it was like a motel room, I think. He was into some kind of stuff, let's just say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Bob Crane actually was the morning guy on one of my old radio stations. He was the morning guy on WICC in Bridgeport in the, I don't know, late 50s, right before he did Hogan's Heroes, actually.
So yeah, the movie with Greg Kinnear, Autofocus.
Yes.
That'll tell you what happened with him.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, also Toadie Fields. She was a famous comedian back in the 60s. You know, I'm sure she'll appear in some movie at some point. Somebody will portray her because, you know, she was one of those that would appear like on the Dean Martin roast kind of thing. Louis Prima, the great singer, who also voiced King Louis in the Jungle Book. For those people who may not actually know who Louis Prima is, but I assume everybody listening has probably seen the original Jungle Book.
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Actor Charles Boyer, he died, committed suicide. Robert Shaw, of Jaws fame, died of a heart attack. You know,
I think he had just done The Deep.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he had just finished something, and he...
It was either The Deep. I'll look it up while you keep talking. It was either The Deep or Forrest in for Navarone. Let me look.
Yeah, and then, let's see, we lost Keith Moon. The drummer of the Who.
Heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The last movie he did... The last movie he did was actually he did a movie posthumously called Avalanche Express. But the last movie he did that he finished when he was alive was Force 10 from Navarone, which did come out in 1978. Some of the great movies he did, he was in The Sting.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually the first time I ever saw him. Well, the second time I should say. The first time I saw him was, of course, as Quint. But the second time I saw him was as Red Grant, the villain in For Marcia with Love, the second ever Bond film. He was in the original Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. He was the original Mr. Blue, who was then portrayed by – was that John Travolta in the remake?
Yeah.
Yeah, John Travolta in the remake. And, of course, he was in Black Sunday, the movie about the Super Bowl, and the last – and The Deep, which is another great underwater movie. But he had just finished Force 10 from Navarone, which is a good war movie. Right before he died, so that's a tough loss, like Robert Shaw.
Yeah, this was a tough year. Edgar Bergen, the great ventriloquist, with Charlie McCarthy amongst others.
Charlie McCarthy is still alive,
right? he's hopefully he's not sawdust. You know, him and Mortimer Snerd. Gig Young, this was a kind of a. It sounds like a what's called Phil Hartman situation, murder suicide here with his he murdered his wife Kim Schmidt. He was actually a former husband of Elizabeth Montgomery.
Oh,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Norman Rockwell, the great artist, passed away, as well as a movie that I didn't know about this guy until Sean Penn played him in a movie, Harvey Milk. He was assassinated. He was the first openly gay politician elected to office. He was assassinated by a disgruntled former city supervisor.
James White. Great movie, by the way, if you've ever seen Milk. And I hate Sean Penn.
It is.
But it's a really good movie.
Yeah.
Great movie. James Franco's in it. It's very good. Highly recommend it. I didn't know anything about Harvey Milk either until... Actually, I first heard about Harvey Milk on the CNN special, The 70s. That's the first time I heard about him. And then I watched the movie, and I'm like, wow, this is actually pretty cool. So check that out. It's a good movie.
Yeah, and then we had Golda Meir, who is the Israeli Prime Minister, a former Israeli Prime Minister, and then Ed Wood, the B movie director, who was portrayed by Johnny Depp, in one of my I really enjoyed that movie actually. I thought that was Johnny Depp was having a good time in that movie. So, yeah,
George the Animal Steel.
George the Animal Steel was in that movie. Yeah. So and
Landau was awesome as Bela Lugosi.
Yes, didn't he win?
Nominated for an Oscar, I think.
I think he won.
I think he won Oscar for as Bela Lugosi, big time.
Yep. Yeah, one of those you have to be double jointed. You also have to be Hungarian.
Yes.
All right, some notable births in '78. We got people like Ashton Kutcher, Zoe Saldana, James Franco. We got Andy Samberg and Bill Hader, a couple of alums of Saturday Night Live who are doing real good these days. James Corden. Kumail Nanjiani, Justin Long, and then music, we have John Legend, we have Usher, and sports, here we go, here, Scott, Kobe. Mm-hmm.
The Black Mamba.
Mm-hmm. Manny Pacquiao, Dirk Nowitzki, golfer Bubba Watson, Erin Andrews, who's you know, really doing her her Fox duties by shrilling SmackDown now. Kurt Busch, Mike Bibby, and then we got some wrestlers. We got CM Punk, Sheamus, Christopher Nowitzki, AJ Styles, Austin Aries, Tamina, ODB, and Candice Michelle. All right, so those were our notable deaths.
I feel old. These guys are younger than us.
In better shape than us, too.
Yeah, a lot of people are better shape than us.
Yeah, exactly. Ain't that the truth?
Except Martin except
Martin Landau, because he's dead. God. Anyway, that's going to do it with the pop culture report part of the show. And we'll move on to sports with Scott. Take it away.
All right. Well, obviously, 1978 was a very memorable year in sports. For the second straight year, we'll be talking baseball, and sadly, it won't be the Mets because I don't even know what they finished that year. But we'll start with baseball. The Hall of Fame the Hall of Fame inducted one guy, Eddie Mathews, former legendary Braves third baseman. The Veterans Committee put in Addie Joss and Larry McPhail. Now, a new system, I'm going to bring this very briefly, a new system was introduced that would continue till 1994. The Special Committee on Negro Leagues had disbanded after its 1977 meeting. They figured, you know, obviously with integration. Two of its members were appointed to the Veterans Committee as part of expanding that body from 12 to 18 members, and its responsibilities were extended to cover the Negro Leagues. They'd be part of the Veterans Committee. Where the Special Committee had elected nine people in 7 years from 1971, the expanded Veterans Committee would elect two in 17 years up until 1994 before they were formed again. 1978 season. Your division winners, no surprise for any of these divisions, the Yankees, Phillies, Royals, and Dodgers. I think they all won it the year before, too. Mm-hmm. Jim Rice won the AL MVP. What a year that he had. I think he had 48 home runs that year. Dave Parker, the fucking Cobra, baby, won the NL MVP. A guy that my dad met when I was 2 years old, and I think, Dr. G, you met him as well, and he's a knight. The Gator, Ron Guidry, 25-3, 1.78 ERA, 250-something strikeouts. What a year he had.
Louisiana Lightning.
Louisiana Lightning. My dad met him in 1974. I was a year old. Right here, right in my hometown, West Haven, Connecticut. The Yankees had a double-A team, the West Haven Yankees. And my dad, you know, my dad took my brothers and he took me. And I, like I said, I think I was a year old. And he signed a picture. And he was terrible. he was not good, Guidry. He got better, obviously, as he got older. And we talked about this in 77 when Sparky Lyle taught him the slider. Forget it. He was unhittable.
Scott, sorry, let me interject something. This is a monumentous year because when Gator was on that run and getting those strikeouts, you know what started the two-strike clap kind of really started this year. And Gator was and Yankee fans were behind it. You know, now it's commonplace when you get two strikes. But it really ramped up during this year, during Gator's run.
Speaking of strikeouts, Johnny, that year, June 17th of 78, and I only know this because my oldest brother graduated from high school on that night, was the night he struck out 18 Angels on a Friday night in the Bronx. And that's where, and that game, and you're exactly right, that's the game where the two-strike clap started. So you are dead right on that, sir. Gaylord Perry won the NL Cy Young with one of his 57 teams this year. he did it for the San Diego Padres. Remember like the – and I miss this. Remember when they used to do the old timers All Star game? Remember they used to play it like the Sunday night before the game, before the All Star game or whatever. And Gaylord Perry's jersey would have like every fucking major league patch on every team he played.
Yeah, the logos. Yeah, that's cool.
Lou Whitaker, Sweet Lou, won AL Rookie of the Year. Bob Horner, who subbed between playing for the Braves on TBS and being a member of the Four Horsemen, won the NL Rookie of the Year. So he was on TBS plenty of times. Pete Rose, that son of a bitch, 44 game hitting streak that year. How about it? Rose won, and of course, but the Reds did not win the NL West. But of course, the big story in 1978, in July, the New York Yankees were sitting 14 and a half games behind on July 17th. Or was it July 17th? They're 14 games by the Red Sox at mid-July. Catfish Hunter was hurt. Jim Beatty was hurt. There was Billy Martin, of course, was, you know, shit-faced and pissed off at Reggie, pissed off at George. And in the end, he resigned, although I think he probably got fired. But he resigned. He infamously wrote his resignation on Yankee letterhead. I think it's actually in the – I think I told you this, G, right? The resignation letter is in the Yankee Museum at Yankee Stadium right now. Remember the last game I was telling you? It's in there. He wrote it on – I don't know if it was Tooch Shore's fucking napkin or something. I don't know. But so he resigned. Bob Lemon, much more laid back, much more easygoing, took over. And the Yankees went on an incredible run. Of course, September 7th, when the Yankees had cut the lead back to four, the Yankees went to Fenway in four games. The final scores were 15-3, 13-2, 7-0, and 7-4. And, of course, it was infamously called the Boston Massacre. And out of the blue, the Yankees and Red Sox were tied for first. In their last 68 games, the Yankees went 48-20, which a loss to the fucking garbage Cleveland Indians on the last day of the season to force yourself to have to play one. You like a little sauce to that? I think the Indians were like 40-130 that year or something. Anyway, and of course, both of you were 99-63 and had to play a one-game playoff that Monday at Fenway Park in Boston. And we all know what happened in that game. Your starters, Mike Torres, the ex-Yankee, started for the Red Sox. Ron Guidry started for the Yankees. Sox took a 2-0 lead. I think Yaz had a homer early in the game. Excuse me. But then, of course, the first guy to ever have fucking as his middle name. He wouldn't be the last one, as we would find out, 25 years later. Bucky Dent, three-run homer. And the Yankees would go on to win the game by the score of 5-4 to win the American League East. I'll ask you something real quick. I'll start with you, Andy, and then Johnny, and then Gia. Has that really happened now? Can that happen now in this culture of baseball where a guy, when you're that deep in a hole, the way baseball culture is now, could a guy get fired or quit midseason and somebody just come in and go on a run? I know Joe Morgan did it in '88 for the Red Sox when McNamara got fired. It almost happened for us in 90 when Davey Johnson got booted and Bud Harrelson went on a run. Johnny, you remember that?
20-2.
Like, and we just missed it against the Pirates in 90. But, I mean, it can happen. But can it happen now? What do you think, Andy?
No.
Can it happen now?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, when these kind of things happen these days, teams are probably usually so out of it. It's like, you know, The Redskins just fired Jay Gruden. I mean, I know it's a different sport, but I mean, you know, the Redskins aren't going on a run. You know, you have to have the tools. I mean, there's not going to be a team as talented as the Yankees were to lose their manager halfway through the season. You know, that's really what it comes down to. It comes down to, you know, guys are getting fired or guys are quitting nowadays because, you know, their teams are underperforming or they just, you know, they're terrible or they have, you know, somebody waiting in the wings. But, you know, this was basically just giant egos that just couldn't
right. –
Yankee Stadium couldn't hold them all.
And
something had to give. You're not going to cut your superstar. The owner's not going anywhere, so who's going to go? It's going to be your manager. Because you know what? He'll be back. You know, Billy – it's like a – like Billy and George couldn't quit each other. It's like, I just can't quit you. You know? Because I think –
What do you think, Johnny? Mm-hmm.
Well, nowadays it's a lot different with the wild card and all that. There's more options for like a team to make the playoffs. So, like in this in '78, there was only a winning a division and that's it. And being behind by such a margin was this was a miracle run. But the firing was more because of Martin's insubordination and his drunken press conference where he referenced you know the statement I said at the beginning of the show where he was talking about Reggie and the owner Steinbrenner. He said one's a born liar and the other's convicted. that statement was kind of the impetus that got him fired or resigned or whatever. And also there was a big game where it went to extra innings and Reggie openly tried to bunt and you know seeing Reggie try to bunt was. was a spectacle. He openly gave Billy Mond an FU where there was the guy on first and Reggie made a poor attempt to try to bunt the guy over when to defy Billy, and that was like insubordination too. So it was more those kind of forces that
could
caused
you, could
Billy,
you,
Billy
could
to
you
get
imagine with the way the media is today and the social media and all that if this were to go on today.
Yeah, but the newspapers, I believe there was a newspaper strike this year, so I don't know if I think this is the year of the big strike.
I think you're right.
With the newspapers.
Did you see Billy tweeting?
He would have tweeted, one's a born liar, the other's convicted, instead of saying it to a reporter. Yeah.
He would have done it with emojis. At Big Stein.
at drink stirrer.
At the boss. Yeah.
At 44.
Do you think
Reggie?
A lot of it though, G? Yeah. Do you think a lot of it, G, was also just the makeup of this team, too?
Well, they were the champions the year before, and the talent was definitely there. I think just like John was saying that you have to the talent's there, but you. They couldn't get it together, like there was a lot of egos there. I think Andy was saying it too, that you have to have all the guys just couldn't get their egos in check, and Billy was off the hook, and there was a lot of injuries as well. But then you bring somebody a little bit of a calming influence to get everybody together, and Bob Lemon was in the right place at the right time. And then I think they wound up hiring Billy back while Bob was the manager. I think they said, "Oh, Billy's coming back for the 1979 season or something like that."
It wasn't this year.
Yeah. Also, the Red Sox played way over their heads. The Yankees were the better team, Gidry could have won the MVP too, even though Jim Rice got it. But I think Gidry should have won MVP too, because he was just a. Even when they were down all those games, him going out there every fourth or fifth day and just dominating was like an automatic win. And that really pushed him.
Definitely one of the most dominant pitching, one of the best pitching years ever, in terms of dominance. Him in recent years, a good in, what was a good in 85.
Clemens in 86. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And I mean, one of those four, he threw a two-hit shutout in one of the four Boston Massacre games. So the Yankees won the division, and they, as usual, beat the Kansas City Royals like they always do.
Yeah. One thing quickly, if you go back and you watch the clip and you listen to the commentary, I think Bill White was in there with I think Rizzuto probably, and I think Bill White was surprised. He's like, "Oh, here he goes!" Oh my God, it's a home run! Oh my God, he didn't realize that Bucky Dent was going to hit over the monster. So
it was a real succinct call. It's like deep to left.
Home run! Got it, home run!
That's right.
And Steinbrenner with his fucking camel hair jacket in the fucking front row with that snarky look in his face, the Mr. McMahon look.
and then in the series they lost the first two to the Dodgers and then they won the next four. Game two was a big Bob Welch for the Dodgers came out of the pen to strike out Reggie Jackson in a dramatic ending to that, but then the Yankees just skull fucked in the next four games straight.
And I don't know who won the was that the year Brian Doyle won the MVP?
Yep, because Willie was hurt. Yeah, Willie Randolph was hurt.
Yep.
So. And a side note, Scott, all Mets, who was the manager of all Mets that year?
I believe it was the first year for manager Joe Torre.
Yeah, the second year. The future Hall of Fame manager Joe Torre, who when he was with the Mets, he couldn't fuck a manager fucking wet dream.
He couldn't manage the fucking Vaseline next to his bed.
They didn't give him much, of course. But
no,
still,
of course they didn't. They gave
no manager could get that fucking team to be.
All right.
Who cares?
Actually, according to Wikipedia, Bucky won the MVP of the series.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah, surprisingly.
The Mets went, let's see. The Mets went a delicious record of 66 and 96. There we go. Our big deal that we signed Elliot Maddox as a free agent. That was our big deal.
That's great.
Yeah.
Did he do coke? Did he get coked up that year or the year?
No, I'm sure he did.
Snorted the third baseline. Yeah.
We
should have never got rid of Doubleday as your owner, so you wouldn't be in all this trouble.
Well, we got good news, though, for Scott and John. George, this is the last World Series championship for the city of New York for the next 15 years. Until not 15 years, sorry. Eight years.
Jesus, can you get the math right? My God, you can't get the math for us.
Again, I was under the, it was my understanding that there would be no math during tonight's podcast recording.
We'll find another roulette for that, all right? Let's go to the NCAA tournament. Speaking of dynasties, Kentucky, led by Jack Givens, beat the Duke
Blue Devils. Yeah, the Goose.
Won the national championship. They beat Duke in the tournament. It was at the Checker Dome in St. Louis. In the draft that year, the number one overall pick, Michael Thompson from Portland, who, of course, I know who you're thinking of, John. That's the following year. Michael Thompson from Portland, of course, he'd end up being a Laker in the 80s.
No, I'm thinking of something else. The number six pick. The Celtics pulled some fucking scam and, Red Auerbach fucking greased somebody.
Well, Phil Ford got the number two. But look at the fourth pick. At number four, the Knicks get Michael Ray Richardson. And you're talking about Elliot Maddox. But yes, Larry Bird went sixth from Indiana State, but he chose to stay for his senior year at Indiana State. He decided to stay with the Sycamores, and we'll talk more about Bird in 1979, but the Celtics kept the rights to him. So,
that was a decent move.
It absolutely was. And look, say what we want about Michael Ray Richardson. He actually was a pretty good player out of Montana. At the time, that wasn't
before
a bad pick.
Before the Coke, he was bad. And also with the Nets in later years, he single-handedly upset the Doc and Moses Sixers in the first round.
But, I mean, obviously the
didn't he get traded for Bernard King?
Bernard King got drafted.
Oh.
So we'll have to see. But and then Mo Cheeks was drafted 36th for the Sixers.
Another decent pick. Yeah,
very good pick. The Hall of Fame that year, Paul Arizin, Joe Foulkes, Cliff Hagan, and Jim Pollard. In the NBA Finals that year, the first of back-to-back years, these two teams met. The Washington Bullets, led by Wes Unseld and, what's his name that played for the for Houston? Elvin Hayes. They beat the Sonics 4-3.
This is an underrated series. It's forgotten about because Magic and Bird and them took over. But for these 2 years, these guys, it was a hard nose. It wasn't really flashy. There was no 3-point shots. But these two teams went at it. Just solid fundamental with Elvin Hayes and Unseld and Phil Chenier. Good. These are competitive series.
Oh, they absolutely were. Absolutely, we're grind him out. I don't know if obviously the 3-point line wasn't there yet.
No.
In the NFL, the number one overall pick in April's draft went to Earl Campbell, the Tyler Rose of Texas, was drafted by the Oilers. Wes Chandler went third to New Orleans. He would eventually become a star with the Chargers. James Lofton, another great wide receiver, went sixth to Green Bay from Stanford. Ozzie Newsome, probably one of the greatest tight ends ever, went 23rd from Alabama. Todd Christensen, believe it or not, was a Cowboy. Before he would have his success with the Raiders. Mosi Tatupu was drafted 215 for the Patriots from USC. Two teams I hate, the Patriots and fucking USC. the Cowboys drafted Lee Washburn, Mr. Irrelevant. And guess who was undrafted that year, guys? Little-known quarterback from the University of Washington named Warren Moon. And, of course, Moon ended up playing for the next 6 years in the CFL. I think he played for Edmonton. I think he played for the Eskimos, if I remember correctly. And, of course, he would end up playing with the Oilers in the 80s. Super Bowl XII was that January to conclude the 1977 season. And, yes, the Dallas Cowboys won their second championship.
Who cares?
The Denver Broncos 27-10. Craig Morton.
What a horrendous offense. The Orange Crush, they had a decent defense, but they had absolutely offense. That was an embarrassment of a Super Bowl.
You guys were even good enough to trade Craig Morton when we traded him to you guys in 73, I think it was. Even you guys thought Craig Morton sucked and you traded him to the Broncos. Incidentally, by the way, this was the first Super Bowl at the Superdome in New Orleans. If you go back to our 1975 episode, we talked about Super Bowl IX, which was the Steelers' first of their four when they beat the Vikings 16-6. That game was supposed to be at the Superdome, but it wasn't done yet. So they had to play at old toilet Tulane Stadium. And that was supposed to be the first Super Bowl at the Superdome, but Super Bowl at the Superdome in New Orleans.
Yeah, Robin Newhouse passed the Golden Richards.
Yes, he did.
Touchdown, yeah.
Yes, he did. There were eight turnovers by the Broncos in that game. Eight.
Oof.
That's unfathomable. The 78 season itself, Cowboys, Vikings, Rams, Falcons, Eagles and Falcons wild card, Patriots, Steelers, fucking Steelers, Denver, and the Broncos. Hey, listen, you were accruing draft picks for your truck driving guys in the 80s, so why don't you zip it? We just talked about your fucking World Series team for like 15 minutes. We're talking about 5 seconds. We're talking about the fucking Super Bowl. Jack Patera won Coach of the Year for the Seahawks. We had talked about the fact that they were as awful as John McKay and the fucking Bucks were. The Seahawks actually were halfway decent for an expansion team. This was also the first season that the league went from 14 to 16 games.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's Ken Patera's brother.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do they have good hair, too? Do they have deliciously fluffy hair, too? Alabama was a preseason number one team in college football. USC was preseason the coaches poll, and Alabama did end up winning the national championship. They beat Penn State in the Sugar Bowl. That was the chicken soup game down at the Cotton Bowl when Notre Dame was trailing Houston, and Joe Montana,
yes,
had a temperature of like fucking 12 degrees, and he guzzled some chicken soup, came out and threw like four touchdown passes in the fourth quarter, and Notre Dame beat Houston 35-34. Your Heisman Trophy winner, Billy Sims. So before Barry Sanders, you youngins, there was a number 20 that played for the Lions. That was a damn good football player. His name was Billy Sims. In hockey, in what would be back-to-back years that our two teams, Mr. D'Amato, would get mollywomped another dynasty, the Montreal Canadiens beat the Bruins 4-2 to win their 20-something Stanley Cup championship. The Cleveland Barons were no longer. They merged with the Minnesota North Stars. Actually, right now at this point, gee, I think the Canadiens, I think, had more – did they have more cups than the Yankees had World Series? I don't know. I know you have more than them now, but I'm curious about the late 70s. It was probably about even.
Yeah, there was at the time because they didn't have 24 in the early 90s.
93, they won their 24.
Yeah, so, and the Yankees had 22 at the time.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Another scam team. They friggin' punked like the Kings or somebody for Guy Lafleur the first few years earlier.
That was the year that they worried about Marty McSorley. That's another year, but anyway. Stupid fucking stuff. The Cleveland Barons were gone. They merged with the Minnesota North Stars. There was no NHL All-Star game that year. Instead, it was the 1979 Challenge Cup, which saw Soviet players come over to North America to play against NHL players. The Soviets won 2 out of 3. The NHL Hall of Fame picked Jacques Plante, one of the greatest goalies of all time. Marcel Pronovost, the defenseman, and Mr. D'Amato, your boy Andy Bathgate.
Yes, his number's in the rafters of the garden. Yes,
yes, indeed it is. Indeed it is. In golf, Gary Player, Andy North. Gary Player won the Masters. Andy North won the U.S. Open. Jack Nicklaus won the British. John Mahaffey won the PGA Championship. Tom Watson was the Tour Money Leader. And for the second year in a row, we had a Triple Crown winner in horse racing. In 77, it was Seattle Slough. In 78, Affirmed won three, the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont. Bjorn Borg won two of the four men's Grand Slams. Four different women won the women's Grand Slams, including the first Wimbledon title for Martina Navratilova, who would end up winning. I think she went like 9 or 10. Chrissy won the U.S. Open. There was a World Cup that year, and it was not won by Brazil. It was won by Argentina.
The host,
Bobby Unser. What?
They were the host country.
Yes, they were. Mm-hmm. Yep, they were. Al Unser won the Indy 500. Bobby Allison won the Daytona 500. There was no Olympics. We were in between. And, so there you go. There's your 1978 year in sports. Let's go now. Speaking of things you could watch sports on, the small screen. Mr. Atherton, the floor is yours.
All right. Canadians, Yankees, and Cowboys in the same year. It's a wonder I didn't kill myself at 11 years old.
You were a Bullets fan that year. That's what it was.
Anyway, so our top-rated television shows for 1977-78 were Laverne and Shirley, Happy Days, Three's Company, 60 Minutes, and Charlie's Angels. Those are our top five. Followed by All in the Family, Little House on the Prairie, Alice, MASH, One Day at a Time, How the West Was Won, Eight is Enough, Soap, The Love Boat, NBC Monday Night Movie, and so on and so forth. Shows that ended in 78 that went on to finish their runs, The $6 Million Man ended that year. Yes. I remember as a kid having the $6 Million Man doll. And if
the doll was awesome.
And you looked through his eyes. He looked through his eye, had the, you know, the you could see all that funky whatever, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's that? That's Johnny and I talked about this on Laughing Theater. Who's that? That's Oscar Goldman. That's
Oscar Goldman.
The $6 million man's boss. That's worth way more.
Classic.
Anyway, the Carol Burnett Show, which was great. We actually lost Tim Conway earlier this year. One of my favorites as a kid, just growing up, just how horrible he was to Harvey Korman. Just relentless. The dentist, all the other stuff, you know, the rolling up and down stairs. Policewoman ended that year. The game show Tattletales. The Bob Newhart Show ended, which actually would get referenced in probably one of my favorite series finales of all time.
Oh, it's tremendous.
Which is the show Newhart. We'll talk about that more when we get there. Maude ended its run. Also, in addition to the $6 million man, the Bionic Woman ended its run. Columbo, Beretta, also, and then also Chico and the Man and the now late Valerie Harper Show, Rhoda. Ended their runs that year.
I didn't realize some of those shows ended in 78. Wow.
Did they have a finale of the wedding, the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman or something? Wasn't that the big finale? They had a wedding or something?
I don't know.
I don't know if they got married or not. I'm assuming they should have, because
he put his metal cock into her.
Is the Bionic Woman the only one that could take the Bionic schlong?
And then they had R2-D2 as their kid.
Okay.
the droid from Buck Rogers. Beady, beady, beady.
So we got guys, though, we talked about this pre-show. Like, some incredible shows, some legendary shows premiered that year. Fantasy Island. Premiered.
They're playing.
I mean, I don't remember if I was allowed to watch it or if I wasn't. I snuck up to, like, see it. But it was fine. They had some fucked up episodes, I remember, of that.
It was a very cerebral show. Like, it wasn't like your typical, like, ha-ha thing. I mean, you had to wrap your head around it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You weren't allowed to watch midgets or...
There were some episodes where it was like, you know, they were very literal about, like, you know, it was like, okay, this is what you want for your fantasy, and then bad shit happens until, like,
so
it was kind of like...
It was a little dark.
It got dark. That's what it was. It wasn't... I had no problems with the late, great Hervé Villechaize. The Incredible Hulk premiered that year.
I love that show.
Fucking great show.
Yeah.
That began the Powerhouse Friday Nights on CBS. Powerhouse Friday Nights on CBS.
Also, Dallas, which, again, another show that I watched and I probably shouldn't have, because I didn't understand what the hell was going on, being 6 years old.
Gino's about to say this. The best part of the show Dallas is the fact that you show Texas Stadium in the credits. Next, continue.
John, 5 months. 5 months we've been doing these shows and we have this. This is crap.
This is trash.
This is trash. Jesus, it all comes back to his beloved Cowboys. Jesus Christ. Anyway, yes, Dallas was a great show with probably the most, I remember as a kid, the most talked about season finale. Like, it was an event. Like, who shot JR? Everybody wanted to know. Nobody knew. And did anybody guess it right at the time? I don't know.
We'll get more into that. I think that was, what, 80? Mm-hmm. I think that was the end of the 80 season. So when we get there, we'll definitely talk about it, because that was like one of the first that could have been construed as like pre-social media kind of thing, you know? But, yeah, no, when we get to 1980, I'm looking forward to talking about that because that was crazy. That was in magazines. Remember magazines? Because, you know, we used to read magazines. That was a big deal back then. Time and People and all the, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know what's so hard when we're going over this stuff is that because of syndication, it gets so confusing in the years that these shows actually came out because a lot of these shows were watched in syndication back in, you know, in the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So my timeline sometimes gets all messed up. I thought the Who Shot JR thing was more in the mid-80s than it was early 80s.
Yeah.
It was 80.
Mm-hmm.
80, the end of the 79-80 season, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
but it's cool.
Yeah, the Tonight Show premiered that year.
Awesome.
Card Sharks, which was...
Oh, I love Card Sharks.
That was a fun fun show. Vegas with...
Mr. Dad loved Vegas.
Bob Urich.
Mm-hmm. Yep, loved Vegas.
A show that's still on now, 2020. Very... one of my favorite game shows as a kid, Tic-Tac-Toe.
Tic-Tac-Toe,
yep. Who didn't love Tic-Tac-Toe?
With the great Wink Martindale. I mean, that's you name your kid Wink, you know, you're pegging him to be a game show host someday. You know what I'm saying? And
go ahead. I'm gonna look it up and confirm if Wink was actually his real name.
It's not. but and then you wanted to find the dragon, all that stuff. the great animation back then.
He's still alive.
Yeah,
he's 85.
He's showing. He's showing like probably like, you know, general car insurance or something. I think,
or like a life insurance or colostomy bags, catheters.
God.
His name is Winston Conrad Martindale, nickname Wink.
There you go.
Tic-Tac-Toe, 7 years starting in 1978. What a great show! Mm-hmm. God, what a great show!
Yeah, Taxi premiered that year.
Oh wow.
Love that. Thank you very much. What do you do at a yellow light? Slow down. What do you do at a yellow light? Slow down. What do you do? Yeah, it's the great Jim. Reverend Jim. And, you know, Louis De Palma, played by the great Danny DeVito. And, you know, you had Lacka Gravis. Thank you very much.
And Tony Danza as Tony Banta. The first of many shows that Tony Danza was on where you had to call him Tony or he wouldn't listen to you.
And, you know.
Seriously, every fucking show he's ever been on, the character's name is Tony, and that's because he won't answer to anything else.
Jeez. Even in Cowboy Run 2.
Yeah. Yep.
And the Mary Lou Henner. Mm-hmm. Very nice. What else happened?
The only woman in a taxi shack full of guys.
And then Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, I love Battlestar Galactica. What a show.
Mm-hmm.
Lauren Green.
Yes.
Mork and Mindy, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mork and Mindy premiered that year. Thank you, John, for catching me there. With Robin Williams, who was like a force in nature, which was spun off from?
Happy Days.
Happy Days.
One appearance, one episode got him a series. They're like, oh, my God, we got to do something for this guy. He just appeared and just what he wanted to take. He wanted to take Richie back to his planet, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's an awesome show. WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yes.
Probably one of my like three favorite shows of all time, easily.
Damato's
my Johnny Fever. Oh, Damato, you're my Johnny Fever.
Yeah.
Venus.
He refers to you as his Les Nessman, but okay.
Women in Chinese food at night with the lights out and chimes. That's my radio station, I'll tell you right now. Women in Chinese food.
Different Strokes came out that year?
Jump like Men in Chinese Food. Different Strokes.
God. Yes, that was the very special episode later on in the filmology, or I guess whatever, of the show. The White Shadow. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And very timely.
On Long Island, still called John Salami.
and then very timely with the passing of Rip Taylor, the $1.98 beauty pageant.
Oh God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, R.I.P. Rip Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Yes, his biggest movie role was in Wayne's World 2. But he was great.
Did you watch The White Shadow?
I did.
Were you a White Shadow fan, Jay?
I watched it sometimes.
You watched it when it was on Yes. That's when you watched it.
What we were watching on Saturday mornings, we were watching the all-new Popeye show, Bugs and Bunny Roadrunner, Tarzan the Super 7, Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?, Fang Face. And my favorite incarnation of the Super Friends was the challenge of the Super Friends. That was the...
Yep.
It was basically, it was the Super Friends versus the Legion of Doom. Every episode, every hero had their villain.
Yep.
It was great team-ups. And another one of my favorite cartoons as a kid, Scooby's All-Star Laugh Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
Where you had three teams, all of Hanna-Barbera, most of Hanna-Barbera was separated. You had the Yogi Yahooies, which was made up of your Yogi Bear, your Quick Draw McGraw, your Huckleberry Hound. Then you had the Scooby Doobies, which was Scooby-Doo. You had Captain Caveman, the Teen Angels. You had Babu. And then the Really Rottens, which were all the bad guys. Who'd you root for?
I think I liked the bad guys. It was a Dick Dastardly, Dick Dastardly.
And Muttley, and all those guys.
Muttley,
yep.
Yeah, whatever that laugh, I can't do that without hurting myself. My sister and I used to every Saturday we used to like have like a robbery because she rooted for the Scooby Doobies and I was always a Yogi Yahooey.
Doing the Scooby Doobies.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo. And then also we had the all-new Pink Panther show. Yogi was double-dipping. He had his Yogi Space Race.
Yes.
The Godzilla Power Hour. Fantastic Four. The Croft Superstar Hour. Fabulous Funnies, which was based on comic strips. So he had like Hagar the Horrible and Beale Bailey, amongst others. And then you had Baggy Pants and the Nitwits.
Jesus. That could be this show.
I don't even want to know which one's supposed to be Baggy Pants. All right, so some TV notes. March 22nd, the Beatles spoof, The Ruddles, All You Need Is Cash, aired.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. And then November 17th, you got to look for it. I believe it is on YouTube. The Star Wars Holiday Special aired on CBS. And actually, viewers got their first glimpse of Boba Fett, who had yet to be... come in officially to the Star Wars universe and Empire. It was their first time they saw him. So, Scott, you're a big Star Wars guy.
Oh, yeah. I watched Holiday Special. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're six, the fuck do you know? You know what I mean?
Was it B. Arthur in it or something like that, too?
Yeah. I think though, Lucas is, because I it's not on the list of stuff, but I guarantee you eventually you'll see the Holiday Special on Disney Plus.
Yeah,
but there were any time I've seen it on YouTube, it's pretty much been blocked. Mm-hmm. So, but because I had it on my, I had it on one of my playlists on my YouTube channel, and but I think it got blocked. I think Disney's, in the know on that now. So, we may see it on Disney Plus. But I mean, the story is garbage, but you do get to see Boba Fett.
Yeah, and a quick plug: make sure you pay attention to Place to Be Nation, Pop. Amongst other things, coming up with the lead up to episode 9 coming out. So check that out coming soon. So one of our favorite shows also here on Ear and Pop is Saturday Night Live, and we like to kind of chronicle each year. So let's talk about some notes from the 78 season. We had Bill Murray replace Dan Aykroyd as the Weekend Update co-anchor. That's John Belushi, a member of a very famous one where John Belushi appears as Elizabeth Taylor. And he says, he's on a, and she's on strict diet, only chicken, and chokes on chicken.
Oh my God.
And you see him punching his chest, like, oh, excuse me, man. Spits up a giant piece of chicken and then just goes back to eating your leg.
So great.
Another memorable sketch, Dan Aykroyd appears as Julia Child and cuts her hand and bleeds uncontrollably when it's spurting out. Father Guido Sarducci and Mr. Bill make appearances that year. Andy Kaufman shows up, plays the bongos and yodels. Very famous Point Counterpoint featuring Jane Curtin and Dan Aykroyd with the famous line, Jane, you ignorant slut.
Jane, you ignorant slut.
Yeah. Yes, talking about actor Leave Marvin and his, I guess, his divorce proceedings or alimony or whatever. And that year, the season finale was John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd's final appearances as regular cast members.
Mm. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they didn't last very long. As the decade progressed, they were realizing that movies was, they wanted to go what Chevy did.
Yeah,
movies was the money maker. So,
and they were getting courted. Well,
speaking
every...
of a John Belushi movie, we will talk about one later on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we will. So the host that year, we had the Rolling Stones, who were also the musical guests, Fred Willard, Frank Zappa, who also double dipped, Steve Martin and Buck Henry, who are regulars on there, Carrie Fisher, the great Walter Matthau, Eric Idle, Elliot Gould, Michael Palin, Cicely Tyson, Ricky Nelson, Kate Jackson, Gary Busey, Margot Kidder, Richard Benjamin, Milton Berle, Michael Palin again, I believe. Yeah, that's his second appearance that year. Maureen Stapleton and Buck Henry again. So yeah, we'll once we get to movies, we'll figure out why some of these guests were there, because it usually coincides with a movie release. The Primetime Emmy Awards that year were hosted by Alan Alda on held on September 17, 1978. Your outstanding comedy series was All in the Family. Your outstanding drama was The Rockford Files. I never knew this. The Muppet Show won outstanding comedy variety or music series, and it was a syndicated show. Sir. I never knew the Muppet Show was an Emmy winner, which is awesome.
Awesome.
I really wish Disney knew what to do with them, because it's so sad. Oh, God. Such a great, great IP, you know, with people our age. Just, we grew up, man. It was every night. 7:30 Channel 2, right? It was the Muppet Show.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. The last thing I watched when I went to bed back
then. Yeah. Your outstanding league actor in a comedy series was Carol O'Connor for playing Archie Bunker on All in the Family, as well as Edith. Jean Stapleton won for best outstanding lead actress in a comedy series. And you had your best actor or outstanding lead actor in a drama series, Ed Asner, for Lou Grant. Your outstanding lead actress in a drama series was Seda Thompson for Family. Then you had your supporting actor and actress in the comedy series was Rob Reiner for All in the Family and Julie Kavanagh of Rhoda. And then outstanding supporting actor in a drama series was Robert Vaughn from Washington Behind Closed Doors. And I never knew she was on the show. The outstanding supporting actress in a drama series was Nancy Marchand, better known as Mama Soprano.
Livia,
that's right. Wow. Thank you.
On
Lou Grant, which was, you know, Lou Grant was interesting because it was a drama spun off from a comedy. So that's going to bring us to the end of the first half of our show, our look at 1978. Lots of great stuff, but there's more. We're going to look at news. We're going to look at music and movies when we return from the break. So, I'm Andy. We're here with Scott, John, and George. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
PlaySpy Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySpyNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the PlaySpy Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The PlaySpy Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlaySpyNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaySpyNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySpyNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation, to the Pop Feed and the Year Pop 1978. I'm Scott Griscola with Andy Atherton, the doctor, Dr. G. George Lim, and J. Arsenio D'Amato. Great A block, guys, and we will be diving into the B block. Andy will open up the newspaper, back when the newspaper was a thing, and get you through the news of the world. We are halfway through Mr. Carter's presidency, amongst other things going on. But first, let's talk about our two awesome podcast feeds at PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll start with the wrestling feed. Chris and Devin came back with their latest pay-per-view reaction show, the incredibly awesome WrestleMania 3 quality Hell in a Cell. Better than, well, I don't know, or WrestleMania 9, depending on your point of view. The most recent episode of the Mothership, the Gold Standard. JR and myself, most recent PlaceToBe podcast. We opened up the decade of the 90s, Steve Benedict. JR and myself did the January 15th, 1990 MFG House Show. On the latest Extreme Three-Way Dance, JR, Johnny, you, and Jenny continued your ECW adventure with When Worlds Collide. The most recent episode of the main event, myself, Nate, and Steve preview the Wednesday Night War, which is, of course, already started between AEW and NXT, plus the New Japan Classic Match Pick. Of course, will be a new episode of Main Event this week. I'll talk more about that later. Ben Zanny interviewed Ian Riccoboni, plus Marco and Logan Stunt on episode 23 of Row 1, Seat 1. And Ben welcomes and Impact Wrestling's Ethan Page on a very special episode 24. That guy's an animal. Andy, I think you do 1,000 shows. Ben fucking Zanny, that guy's a beast.
Yeah, he just cranks, he cranks him out, man.
I know. Row 1, Seat 1, tremendous show. Check out the wrestling page. Other stuff before we get to the pop feed, PlaceToBeNation.com. You've heard of that site, right, Andy?
Yeah, yeah. Dabbled in a little. Dabble a little bit. Check it out. Check it out.
Voices, fresh takes, plenty of great articles, wrestling, sports, pop culture. Every Wednesday, of course, the most interesting and unexpectedly funny stories as Glenn Butler does his weekly walk. Myself and Logan Crosland have always have our weekly campus hot takes. Looking back at the previous week in college football, looking ahead to the big matchups the following week. Of course, everybody wants to hear me talk about Notre Dame's 52-0 win over Bowling Green on Saturday. But the campus hot takes will be up. Yeah. Mr. Atherton, what's going on in the pop feed?
Well, over here on the pop feed, the very feed that you are listening to right now, the hard-traveling fanboys, they go off the page and kick off their annual Walking Dead month with a discussion of Fear the Walking Dead Season 4, Episode 1. As we are in October, Scott, you are continuing your look at classic Universal monsters in the latest edition of Pop Goes the Classics with 1931's Frankenstein. Excellent show. They're quick hits. Cover a lot of bases. And the Dracula, which was the first episode. Frankenstein's the second. What's coming up third?
Coming up this week will be The Mummy, which was the other one that Boris Karloff did. And then later on in the week will be The Invisible Man.
Awesome.
And then there'll be more coming up on the horizon. So, month.
For all your classic monster needs, Mr. Griscola's got you covered. DC For You kicked off a month of DC Comics' best horror offerings with a list of Russell and Todd's favorite scary DC stories, plus a look at the Keanu Reeves Constantine film from 2005. Johnny! You and the cowboy, Roger Morissette. You guys recap the latest sets of games and preview upcoming weekends, the next weekend games on This Week in the NFL, which hits every week here on the Quick Nation. Puffy, siblings Kevin and Mary host a brother-sister rewatch podcast, episode 19. They bring you The Office, season 3, episodes 9 and 10. On Laugh in Theater, I welcome David Sunday. We did a live watch of Sorry, Married, and Axe Murderer. Lots of fun there. And on the latest episode of PTBN's E-Ticket Attraction, Jason, welcome myself to discuss that other theme park in Orlando, Universal Studios Florida. And later on in the show, he is joined by his friend Starla Marie Locke to recap Universal's Halloween Horror Nights. So guys, the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament has concluded. It's come to an end. The Greatest Song of the 80s, per the voters of the Place to Be Nation Greatest Song of the 80s tournament, is Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses. What do you guys think of that? Real quick.
It's fucking great. I mean, look, objectively, when we did the pocket, when we did our preview pod, I picked Billie Jean, and it made a decent run, but I'm stunned because I thought if you were going to ask me if a Guns N' Roses song was going to make this kind of run, I was going to say Welcome to the Jungle in a heartbeat, but I did not. Sweet Child's actually my favorite song on Appetite, and it's actually my favorite Guns N' Roses song. I'm just stunned. I'm stunned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad Billy G didn't win. So
yeah, sure, a lot of people are.
Yeah. Eye of the Tiger made a run though.
Mm-hmm. Towards the end, I was really hoping for "Don't You Forget About Me" by Simple Minds to make it. You know, there were a few. I mean, we may have a recap podcast of the tournament. So
yes, we may. Sure.
You know, we'll kind of break it down, like kind of what we saw, what happened, what you know, what was unusual, you know, and you never know when certain fandoms get a hold of the tournament, which is,
that's right.
You know, people die on certain hills for
Colonel DeBeers.
Colonel DeBeers and the Truth Commission comes in, the Commandant and the Jackal. Anyway, so of course, we love tournaments at Place of the Nation, and our next one is right around the corner. Though we're not going to announce it tonight. Scott, you know, you and your PIC, Mr. Rosero, you're going to announce that on the next episode of the Place to Be podcast. You guys are recording on Monday night, October 14th, and usually gets posted that night. So stay tuned.
Correct.
All right. Yep. Also, don't forget, check out a brand new podcast feed brought to you by our very own Jennifer Smith. The Jenny Position can be found on Podbean, iTunes, and your favorite podcatcher app. It will be the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Freak Out Driving, and lots of fun new content. Also, for the month of October, Placement Nation is holding our first annual Halloween Movie Challenge. We're giving you suggestions on what movies you should watch leading up to All Hallows Eve. And when you do, go on social media, let us know by using the hashtag PTBN Halloween Movie Challenge. But why stop there? Every time you watch a scary or silly horror movie or special, let us know and we'll add it to our list. So, speaking of scary and silly, let's go into the news of 1978. So we mentioned a little bit earlier the Camp David Accords happened, which was an effort to secure peace between Israel and Egypt, which was they were negotiating at Camp David during an important summit. It was signed by Anwar Sadat, Menachem Begin, and then President Jimmy Carter to create a framework under which the peace treaty was agreed to during the following year, ending a 31-year state of war between the two nations. NASA unveiled their first group of women astronauts in that January. Okay, a little feedback there. The group included Shannon Lucid, Margaret Reyes Seddon, Catherine Sullivan, Judith Resnick, Anna Fisher, and Sally Ride. The women enrolled in astronaut training and completed in August of 79. The Double Eagle 2 balloon, piloted by Larry Newman, Ben Abruzzo, and Maxie Anderson, became the first balloon to complete a transatlantic flight that year. That's amazing. That was the first time that happened was in 78. That seems like something that would happen a little earlier. The Japanese explorer Naomi Imura became the first person to reach the North Pole in a solo expedition in May. The world's first human conceived through in vitro fertilization, Louise Brown, was born on July 25th in the United Kingdom, called a test tube baby by the press. So that was the creation of IVF back then. Bulgarian defector Georgi Markov was assassinated by Bulgarian secret police using a poisoned umbrella tip. That's straight out of James Bond right there. And a big, big event in the world of cult leaders. The People's Temple religious cult was founded by Jim Jones in Indianapolis, Indiana, back in 1958. He moved his church to Ukiah, California in 65, and then San Francisco in 71. A group of People's Temple member moved with Jim Jones to the Johnstown compound in Guyana, South America, after Jones was accused of financial fraud. U.S. Congressman Leo Ryan visited Jonestown at the request of the People's Temple members and relatives of the current members. He visited on November 17, 1978, with some observers and journalists. Several residents of the compound asked Ryan to for help in returning to the United States. This angered Jones, who feared his followers would defect, and he ordered a group to kill the five visitors, including Congressman Ryan. On November 18th, Jones commanded his followers to drink poison punch. Many of them willingly drank the poison, but there was also evidence that several others had to be forced to drink it. And by the armed guards, there was a death toll of over 900 people. More than 300 of them were children. Jones was found dead of a gunshot wound. That's just an incredible story. I mean,
yeah, if you watch the CNN, I mentioned the show earlier, if you watch the CNN series The 70s, which I think is still on Netflix, there's an episode on cults, and they do a big piece on Senator Ryan and the whole Jim Jones, French Guyana. It's, and then you see the overhead pictures. It's just fucking disturbing. You just see bodies on the ground for miles and miles, just fucking corpses everywhere. It's disturbing. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, this guy goes down there to kind of like, you know, figure out what the hell's going on, and he just gets murdered. It's like, Jesus.
Gets murdered, yeah.
I mean, that's, unfortunately, that's where the common phrase, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid.
Drinking the Kool-Aid, exactly. He was the only sick fuck in 1978, as you're about to say.
Oh, yeah. Well, the serial killer, Ted Bundy, he was recaptured on February 15th. The Hillside Strangler serial killer killed his final victim, his 10th, in Los Angeles. And John Wayne Gacy is arrested on December 22nd. So it was a year for serial killers. In 78. On December 11th that year, six men robbed the Lufthansa cargo facility at JFK Airport. That sounds familiar. I wonder, was there a movie based on that? Of course, we're talking
about... Stacks left the car running. Fucking Stacks. Go make the coffee, Stacks.
Everybody loves Stacks.
Hey, you're running late. Going to be late to your own funeral.
The cause, it was a gift from my mother.
Tony Carboni.
Shut the fuck up. Nice game.
Get the papers, get the papers.
Nice fucking game, nice fucking game. Anyway, we had three popes that year, actually. Pope Paul VI died at age 80. Then John Paul I becomes pope on August 26th and dies just 33 days later. And then Cardinal Carol Wojcicki. Wojtyla. Becomes Pope John Paul II. That's the Pope I remember, because we were kids, you know, back then.
Yeah.
JP the Deuce, as people like to call him in slang.
JP the Deuce. I think Dr. G had a shirt that said that. JP the Deuce, my guy.
All right. So that's your news of 1978. Scott, what happened in the music of that year?
Oh, in the music world, everything was fucking great in 78. Let's put it this way. We have the Brooklyn Long Island soundtrack of 1978. we'll go through the top 10. We'll go to the top 10, and then I'll pick out some other singles that stood out that year. Number 10, Three Times a Lady by the Commodores, or in the Rosati's case, Three Tons of Lady. But Three Times a Lady was a great song. Number 9, Boogie Oogie Oogie by A Taste of Honey. Number 8, Love is Thicker Than Water by Andy Gibb. Number 7, Baby Come Back by Player. Tremendous yacht rock cut now. Number 6, How Deep Is Your Love by the B-Fucking-G's. And number 5, Kiss You All Over by Exile. That was playing in some Long Island bars. Oh, yeah. Number 4, Staying Alive, once again, by the B-Fucking-G's. You see a trend here. Number 3, You Light Up My Life by Debbie Boone. Dr. G plays that on every jukebox he sees. At number 2, Night Fever, once again, by the B-Fucking-G's. And the number one song of 1978, Baby G, Andy Gibb, Shadow Dancing. So needless to say, the Bee Gees kicked ass. At one point, on a Billboard Top 10 in 1978, I think in February, five of the top 10 songs that week were – all five were written by the Bee Gees, and they sang four of them. That's unprecedented. You don't see that now. They were fucking – they were a machine in 77, 78. A machine. Another soundtrack that did pretty well in 78 was – and we'll talk about this movie shortly, and that is Grease. And the title track of the movie was sung by Frankie Valli, and that was number 11. Speaking of Grease, plenty of Grease in this the rest of the countdown. You're the One That I Want. Of course, the song that Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta sang while they were dancing at the carnival at the end was number 13. Emotion by Samantha Sang, another one written by the Bee Gees, at least by Barry. At number 15, Lay Down Sally by Mr. Clapton himself. Number 17, a song you know very well, Dr. G, from The Stranger, Billy Joel, Just the Way You Are. I remember where I heard that song once. I can't remember. Anyway, With a Little Luck by Wings at number 18. Another song off the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, If I Can't Have You by Yvonne Elliman. If I can't have you,
I don't want nobody, baby. 19.
Let's see. Any other good? We can't talk about Queen. We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions at number 25. Number 26.
Oh, you love this song.
The song, baby. Little Baker Street, Jerry Rafferty. One of the greatest songs ever in the history of ever. A great album that we all like. Meatloaf with 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad. Last Dance by Donna Summer. Gee, where did I hear that song from? Would you give this this fucking list to the guy at what do you call it? The hell was the name? What was the DJ place? I don't remember what it was called. What was the guy's name again? King DJ in Brooklyn. I think you just gave him this fucking list because, like, I think he played like 30 of these fucking. Another Grease song, Hopelessly Devoted to You, at number 35. Hot Blooded by Foreigner. They were moving up the charts at number 36. You mentioned a Kansas song earlier, Mr. Atherton, but not the one I'm thinking of. Dust in the Wind was at number 39. Another Andy Gibb song, An Everlasting Love, at number 45. Number 62. Number 62. Another Yacht Rock staple. Mr. D'Amato knows this song very well.
Peg.
By Steely Dan. What Peg was supposed to do was steam these nuts. 62, where's the broccoli? At number 65, Reminiscing by the Little River Band. That's another fucking yacht. This is like the Yacht Rock Hall of Fame. Speaking of Sean Cassidy, Hey Dini at number 68. Oh, rest in peace, Eddie Money. Baby Hold On, number 67. Another Grease song, Summer Nights by John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John at 69. Dr. G, another one of your favorites. His name was Tony. Or was it? His name was Lola. No, her name was Lola. She was a dancer.
You're right. You're talking about me and math.
Lola, Tony, fucking Rico, whatever.
Whatever.
Who
cares?
Copacabana by the great Barry Manilow. Boston's Don't Look Back at number 93. Turn to Stone by ELO at 94. Hollywood Nights by Bob Seger at number 99. And another Yacht Rock staple, Deacon Blues by Steely Dan at number 100. Some of the great albums that came out in 1978, the number one album of the year, Darkness on the Edge of Town by Bruce Springsteen. Number two, This Year's Model by Elvis Costello. Number three, arguably, I'm saying arguably because Appetite is maybe one of the greatest ever. One of the greatest debut albums of all time, The First by the boys from Southern California, Van Halen. Running with the Devil, Jamie's Crying, Ice Cream Man, Atomic Punk. What the fuck else is on there? Eruption, You Really Got Me. That's one of those albums you really can't not listen to from beginning to end. Number four, Parallel Lines by Blondie. Number five, the debut album by The Cars. Number six, Die Man Machine by Kraftwerk. One of those German synth pop bands. Some Girls by The Stones at 7. Third by Big Star at 8. Hemispheres by Rush. What a tremendous album. I think that's the one that has Spirit of Radio on it. And Free Will. And number 10, More Songs About Buildings and Food by Talking Heads. So you can see, guys, that new wave and punk are starting to creep into the album mainstream. As you see The Cars and Elvis Costello and Talking Heads. Some other great albums that came out that year. The debut album for Dire Straits. Outlandos de Amor by a little-known punk band called The Police. Powerage by AC/DC. Great album. Jazz by Queen. That's another great album. The Band with The Last Waltz. And, of course, they did a movie. In fact, I have the DVD here in Studio B from that last great concert. I highly recommend watching that. I know you've seen it, Johnny. Gia, you and I have to watch it. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Johnny, I know you've seen The Last Waltz. Andy, have you ever seen it?
No.
No, I don't.
No? It's the The Band, which, of course, was I'm brain farting. Bob Dylan's backup band. Okay. Their final live performance. It was not at the Beacon. I'm trying to remember where it was. Anyway, they had all sorts of guests. Clapton, Neil Diamond, just crazy stuff. But one album that we definitely have to talk about that came out in 1978 and is arguably, and I don't care how long it takes, I don't care who gets pissed off about it because I don't give a shit. It came out on October 13th, 1978. Another one of those albums that I could easily play from beginning to end, and that is, of course, 52nd Street. I contend, this is just me, that this is Billy's best album. This is his magnum opus. Top to bottom, there's not one bad song on the album. Honesty. Let's see if I can get it right. Hold on. Big Shot. Honesty. Help me out, G. I'm trying to go in order. My Life. Is that third?
Yeah. Yep.
Stiletto. I think. No. Zanzibar, Stiletto, Rosalinda's Eyes, Half a Mile Away. Of course, one of the greatest album cuts of all time, Until the Night. And 52nd Street, of course, caps the album off. Andy, do you know the album well?
Yeah. Actually, my dad had it. I remember seeing the album cover when I was a kid. And I remember, you know, Big Shot was on all the time. My Life was the theme song for Bosom Buddies. So,
yep. Not Billy's version, though. Some hump sang it.
Yeah.
Billy's version was originally, and then they wouldn't pay for it anymore.
Yeah, and syndication, it's somebody else. But yeah, I remember it being Billy. And Honesty is another great song. Not as familiar with the rest of the album, but yeah, those three songs, you know, are up there for me with my fandom of Billy. Not as crazy as you guys, but I do love me some Billy Joel.
Oh, who doesn't? Well, mm-hmm. A few, but they have no taste. Until the Night is one of G's, and Johnny knows that song. It's one of G's and my favorite songs ever. I want to ask both you guys. I'll ask you, Johnny. I know everybody loves The Stranger so much, but I contend that this song's better because I think this album's a little better because I think Billy and Phil Ramone really settled in. Like, I think they were getting to know each other when they were doing The Stranger, but this album, I feel like him and Phil Ramone really settled in.
Yeah, top to bottom, you can't argue that this is his best.
I've had this conversation with you, G, I think at least 3 million times. Do you consider this his best album?
Yeah, I think this was the one. I mean, The Stranger was the one that broke, you know, made him into a superstar. But I think this one definitely, because of being able to work with Phil Ramone, you know, getting used to his style. And I mean, one thing about his music, which is great, which we always say, is that not one song sounds the same. You know, like there's certain artists, even like Rod Stewart. To me, a lot of his songs, especially when he, you know, late 70s. Early 80s or into the 80s, they all sound the same. The songs sound the same. Like every song of Billy is different. I don't know. It always has a different sound to it. So I just thought this one had a nice mixture to it. And like Andy was saying, you always heard Big Shot on the radio. Big Shot, My Life, Honesty. That was always on, I remember, especially in New York, you know, because I was still living in New York at the time when this came out. You know, but I agree with you. I think top to bottom, this is where Billy really put it all together, comfortable with the band, comfortable with Phil Ramone, and really there's not a bad song on the album.
Rolling Stone put it 352 of their top 500 albums of all time. And you talked about the band, G, and this is where his band, I mean, this is when they were at their peak. I mean, him and Richie Cannata. And Doug Stegmeier, Liberty, Russell Javers. I mean, this was his peak 70s band right here. And then things would change a little bit by, I think, 1980 when he does his next album, which we'll get to. Things change a little bit. And then by the time he gets to Nylon Curtain a couple years later after that, the band changes wholesale. But, I mean, this is his 70s band. Him, Richie, Russell Javers, Doug Stegmeier, and Liberty. DeVito.
Peter Cetera did some backing vocals.
Peter Cetera did indeed do some backing vocals. I'm trying to look here and figure out what he did. It says he did backing vocals on three songs, but it doesn't say which three songs he did. But he did do backing vocals on three songs on 52nd Street. So, number 352 of Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums of All Time. And we will talk more about this album on our next episode at the 1979 Grammys. So I was not going to let us go without talking about the greatness of that album. Speaking of the Grammys, we'll talk about this year's Grammys, the 1978 Grammys, which took place on February 23rd. Of course, this was for songs and albums that came out in 77, so there won't be a ton of Bee Gees here because they'll be nominated in 79. Record of the Year, Hotel California. Album of the Year, Rumors. And we talked a lot about Rumors in the last episode. And Hotel California. Song of the Year, Evergreen, which is the love theme from A Star is Born, which I listened to that song way too much in the 90s. It was actually a tie. You Light Up My Life actually tied Evergreen Song of the Year. That song was all over the radio. I wanted to blow my brains out every time I heard You Light Up My Life. What else did she do? What did she do since then? What did DB do? What did Debbie Boone do? Did she sell milk with Pat? I don't know. Anyway, that was one hit. Here were the Mr. Atherton did the hosts of Saturday Night Live in 1978. Here are the musical guests. The Rolling Stones, of course, that opening night of the season, they hosted and played. Devo, Frank Zappa, who double-dipped. Van Morrison, The Grateful Dead. The Blues Brothers, and that was, of course, the band with John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. And they actually debuted Soul Man. I believe they also sang Rubber Biscuit on that episode, which, of course, is on their Pocket Full of Suitcase Full of Blues album. By the way, highly recommend it. For some reason, on December 2nd, they didn't have a musical guest. That was fucking weird. Kate Bush, Peter Tosh with Mick Jagger. Peter Tosh, big reggae star. Doobie Brothers, Talking Heads, Judy Collins. Judy Collins. God, who the hell would have her on Saturday Night Live? Ooh, God. Imagine you're all sitting there all hyped up. Everybody's coked up or smoking weed. Then you got to hear Send In the Clowns.
Send In the Clowns. Oh, my dad's favorite's coming up next.
Oh, Delbert McClinton, baby.
Yeah, he loves him. Program.
Delbert McClinton. Giving it up for your loving every day. Delbert, that's big Imus guy. The I-Man loves love Delbert McClinton. UB Blake and Gregory Hines, Gary Busey with Rick Dangle and Paul Butterfield, his big instrumental player. The Chieftains, Ricky Lee Jones, Ornette Coleman, James Taylor, Linda Ronstadt, and Phoebe Snow, and Bette Midler. So that's funny. Billy was not on in 78. Isn't that odd? I'm sure he was on in 77. So there is your musical landscape. I'm sure I missed a few albums. I'm pretty sure let's talk about Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Let me confirm that came out in 78 before I... Not Paradise by the Dashboard Light. That's a song on the album. Of course, I'm talking about Bat Out of Hell. Let me confirm that came out in 78. I don't want to forget it if it didn't. Bat Out of Hell came out... Nope, came out in 77. Never mind.
77, yeah.
Yep, I think we mentioned it in the last episode. I just wanted to make sure. I didn't want to forget it.
Because Paradise is on the charts so long. And
right.
Finally, 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad... made it to in 78 as a single.
Yep. Absolutely. So there is 1978 in music, including
A lot of disco. This is one of the last years that disco dominated. It's
absolutely.
Like a studio 54 night if you look at the top 100 songs.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the Bee Gees were all over bars around Long Island, and of course Dr. G, Mom and Pop going out to the clubs with their chains, gold chains on, and shirts only halfway buttoned. What do you think?
No doubt.
What were they all drinking? Gin and tonics? What was the drink?
What's
your dad drink?
Scotch and water. What do you think?
Oh, Cuddy and water. Cuddy and water.
Hey, Spider, give me a Cuddy and water.
Spider, give me a dance, you bumbling prick, you.
You stirring prick, you. Hey, dance. Nice fucking game.
Another Pop Goes the Classics. Anyway, that is it for the year in music. So let's wrap things up, Mr. Atherton, with the year in movies. The big screen, sir.
Yes, that's right. Lots of fun stuff happened. We're going to just shake up the order a little bit of this segment. The average price of a movie ticket was $2.34. That's slightly up. The 50th Academy Awards took place that year on April 3rd. Hosted by Bob Hope. And Annie Hall was your best picture. Woody Allen won Best Director for Annie Hall. Richard Dreyfuss was your Best Actor for The Goodbye Girl. Diane Keaton, again, for Annie Hall. Best Supporting Actor, Jason Robards for Julia. That was his back-to-back Oscar wins. Best Supporting Actress, Vanessa Redgrave for Julia. Your Best Original Screenplay was Woody Allen and Marshall Brickman for Annie Hall. And Best Adapted Screenplay was Julia by Alvin Sargent. Julia and Turning Point tied for most nominations each with 11. And now the most wins, now, although it didn't win any of the major awards, Star Wars took home 6 Oscars, I'm talking about episode 4. But Annie Hall, I guess you may want to recognize with the major awards, won 4, which was Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, and Best Original Screenplay. Now, some of the movies that came up before we get to the top 10, some other movies that came out that year was Return from Witch Mountain, the original Dawn of the Dead, which was a fun movie. The Buddy Holly story, excellent, which was early Gary Busey. Foul Play, the Goldie Hawn Chevy Chase.
Oh, what a great movie.
Yes.
Funny as hell.
Mm-hmm. At the probably around their peak, Up in Smoke by the comedy duo of Cheech and Chong.
Cheech and Chong.
Oh, God. So good.
Mm-hmm. The Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Great remake. Mm-hmm. Great remake. Donald Sutherland, Leonard Nimoy. And actually, Kevin McCarthy makes a cameo in that.
Ah.
Of course, he was in the original. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Wiz came out that year with Michael.
I like The Wiz.
It's okay.
He's on down the road. I like The Wiz.
Mm-hmm. With Nipsey Russell, probably his biggest role besides Wildcats, I guess.
This will be the only podcast where you'll ever hear references to both Rip Taylor and Nipsey Russell in the same show. Epic, baby, epic.
Unless we ever do like a Hollywood Squares retrospective, I don't know.
Yes, with Paul Lynn.
Oh well, don't you know? Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band came out that year. The Great Train Robbery. Game of Death and the original Piranha. Now,
I like the original Piranha. Mm-hmm. Weird. Here
you go.
Nonsensical, but a good movie.
Here you go, Scott. Now you've
Game of Death. Bruce Lee. Mm-hmm. Who was Bruce Lee? Main villain in that.
Wasn't that? Was that
Scott? You should know. It was
Kareem.
Kareem, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A movie that the top ten. A movie that you've talked about quite a bit on various and sundry podcasts, Scott. Halloween. Number 10 that year?
Oh, it's the movie that started the slasher genre. And stay tuned this month here on the Pop Feed for a special slasher podcast. Look at you. Segways.
Synergy.
I wonder who's going to be hosting that one.
Well, hosting is me. It's just a question of who the guest is. Continue.
Oh, Lord.
I can probably guess, but...
Yeah, it's not that hard. No, trust me. y'all, don't go there, Scott. I know what you're thinking. Be nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, so at number 9 was The Deer Hunter, which is ironically a movie that you're not allowed to edit, and you have to blur Robert De Niro's Schwanz.
yes.
I know that from work experience. Number 8 was Revenge of the Pink Panther. At number 7, now, how do you guys feel about this movie, Jaws 2?
I like Jaws 2.
Yeah?
Yes. It wasn't bad for a sequel.
No, it wasn't bad at all.
No, I mean, they tried to raise the stakes, you know, with finding a killer whale dead. You know, what fucks up a killer whale, basically, is like, you know.
Yeah.
And then the whole scene with all the teenagers, I guess, at the end with, you know, you thought one of Brody's kids was going to get killed. You were kind of hoping for it.
Well, annoying, but...
Oh, yeah, Sean, which actually he gets killed in Jaws of Revenge. They actually kill him off. Number 6 was Hooper.
Probably one of my, like, 3 favorite Burt Reynolds movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, love Hooper.
Number 5 was Heaven Can Wait with, I believe that is, what's his name, Warren Beatty?
Warren Beatty, yes.
I fucking hate Warren Beatty, but that actually is one movie that I actually like.
Okay. Number 4, a movie I saw a lot as a kid, Every Which Way But Loose.
Right turn, Clyde.
I love those. Love those movies. Between that and Every Which Way You Can. I mean, I used to love it when his brother, like, shit was about to go down. His brother would take his hat and turn it around backwards.
Yes. Yep.
And Ruth Gordon played his cranky mother.
Yep.
That goddamn baboon ate my Oreos.
Somebody has to be a Pop Goes the Classic.
Stick them up, bang. That was orangutans were big at that time. You had that. You had those movies. You had Going Ape, and you had Cannibal Run 2. All great orangutan movies. Number 3 movie which will be on Laughing Theater. That's at one point. Animal House.
I'm looking at it right now, my copy in Studio B. The first National Lampoon foray out of the magazine pages and onto the big screen, Doug Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
I think he directed it. And, of course, that cast is great. John Vernon as Dean Wormer is probably one of the greatest bad guys in the history of television of movie comedy.
Mr. Blue, Mr. Blutowski, 0.0. Mr. Dorfman,
years of college down the drain.
Mr. Dorfman,
double secret
probation. Mr. Dorfman, fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Your name is Flounder. Why Flounder? Why not?
What were you gonna say, Johnny? Before I stepped on,
put Niedermeyer on it. He's a sneaky shit, just like you.
And you'll hear more jumps like that because Johnny, Johnny will be the one joining me on Laughing Theater for Animal House.
Season two.
Yes, yes, we did get renewed. Yes. We did get renewed. Season two will be coming soonish. But yes,
I think Dr. G is our D Day. I think you could drive the tank, Jay.
Well, I figured we had to wrap this podcast up because you probably have another one you're hosting after this one.
I'm going to bed. Well,
what's the next?
We're doing Pop Goes the Classics, Birth of a Nation. No.
Oh, shit. Oh, God.
How do I watch flies fucking?
We did. That's the third. That's the third any which way but can. No, Animal House is an absolute class.
Number two, we had Superman, the Richard Donner classic starring Christopher Reeve, yes. Margot Kidder. Probably my favorite Lex Luthor, Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman. It's a lot of people's favorite Lex Luthors.
And Ned Beatty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then Valerie Perrine as Ms. Tessmacher!
Mm-hmm. Yes, we actually, Superman is one of the topics on the next episode of Great Debate, which will be coming soon. So hopefully we'll have a good discussion there.
Superman, yours. You're a Christopher Reeve guy.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have your little Superman underoos?
Who are you talking to, me?
Gee, where'd you go?
No.
I thought you were putting your underoos on.
Shh. You're not supposed to tell anybody about that.
Superman. I watched that with you.
Love Superman. I love it. They're one of my favorites.
Took your wife 5 weeks to watch it, but we got her through it. Falls asleep after 6 minutes. But nah, great movie. It's, you know, on a side note, I want to talk about Superman for a minute because, you know, at the time we didn't, you know, superhero movies really wasn't in chic. You know what I mean? Neither was sci-fi before Star Wars the year before. Think about cinema in the 70s, and we talked about this. We've got guys in previous episodes. Most of the 70s was either cop movies, disaster films, or anything like, you know, the fall of our government, like All the President's Men and, you know, Watergate and that kind of Vietnam movies and that kind of thing. So I think it's amazing how we were able to get out of – same thing with TV – how we were able to get out of like the dark, gritty, depressing, cynical way of thinking. And when we had Star Wars in 1977 and then this year with Superman in 78, we started to get out of that and go back to, you know, regular heroes instead of having to have guys like Popeye Doyle throwing guys down fucking subway stairs, you know, which is a great movie, French Connection. But now we have movies like Superman where we actually go back to having regular heroes. You know, good guys, movies with happy endings, because we didn't have that much in the 70s. So it was interesting. And we said the same thing with TV after all those Norman Lear, you know, lecture you on how shitty your life is sitcoms. We got stuff like Little House on the Prairie and things like that. We got back to like good, wholesome, fun, you know, back to imagination shows. And the same thing with movies. I thought this was a perfect time for Richard Donner, who, by the way, did The Omen before he even did Superman. And so he dabbled in horror and actually put together a pretty good movie 2 years earlier. And the timing was just perfect for Superman, you know. Did you see the movies, G? I don't think I did. I was – what was I, five? I might have, actually.
You know, I don't – that's one I don't remember if I saw it in the movies or not.
I saw Superman 2 in the movies. That one I definitely saw.
Yes, that I definitely saw in the movies.
Find it, Houston? But John's like, enough of the superhero fucking shit. Cops in the fucking mob, man.
No. These ones I liked. I saw the Superman in the theaters.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a comic book fan. So to me, Superman, the story of Superman, is the way it was in the movie, not the way it is in comic books.
Well,
so,
it's
like
close.
When you talk to me about some of the stuff with Superman, I'm like, no, that's not how it was in the movie.
In your eyes, Jor-El looks like Marlon Brando. Jor-El is Vito Corleone. By the way, did another movie? I think it came out in 79. But anyway, I'm sorry, Andy. I just wanted to make a point about Superman and how we've now had two straight years where we had huge movies. We still had our cynical movies and, you know, Annie Hall and Woody Allen's terrible sense of humor. But now we have movies with heroes in it, like Superman and Star Wars, and we're kind of getting back to like having good old, like wholesome, happy ending movies. So that's why I think Superman finished number two.
As much as I love Superman, I can't wait till 80 when we talk about Superman 2.
Superman 2 was tremendous.
It's awesome, awesome. And Richard Donner, who went on to direct The Goonies, he also directed The Toy, which I don't remember.
That, I don't remember him directing that either.
You can't make The Toy today.
No.
Oof. What are you doing here, you asshole? With the great Therese Ganzel. Anyway, so we talked about it earlier.
Masturbates.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bates.
Sorry, Mr. Bates.
Maybe we'll talk about The Toy maybe when we get to 82 for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. But the number one movie we talked about earlier in the music section, it's The Word. Grease is The Word. This was everywhere. It's still a huge part of pop culture. It still gets referenced. Incredible. One of the most successful musicals of all time, probably. Launched the careers of Travolta was already around, but this really pushed him to superstardom. And then Olivia Newton-John, who I found this fun fact earlier today when I was speaking with my girlfriend, Ellen, that Olivia Newton-John could not do an American accent. She had a lot of trouble with, which is why Sandy was from Australia in the movie, and actually in the play, she's not. She's American. So that's a little fun fact for you. But Grease is everywhere. Everybody our age knows Grease, has sung it at karaoke, lip syncs, whatever. Johnny, what about you for Grease? You a T-Bird, you think?
Definitely. Travolta was on fire. It's sad because nowadays Travolta's kind of like a punchline because of a string of bad flicks and all that. But coming off Saturday Night Fever, this is what a run back to back. He was on fire here, and the music just dominated everything. Terrific movie.
Gee, what about you? What about you for Grease?
Oh yeah, staple in my household. It's definitely my sister's favorite movie. That I could tell you. John was saying the music to it, but also John Travolta was just hot, and then he did Welcome Back, Carter, I think around the same time. Mm-hmm. I think so. He was just just totally hot. And the funny thing about it is everybody thinks he's from New York because of the way he acts, and he's from Indiana. So that's the thing. I think he was one of those actors that are kind of underrated. Like you said, now he's kind of like a punchline right now because of some bad string of movies. But I think overall he's a pretty good actor. And then they tried the sequel, Grease 2, and that sucked. I did not enjoy that at all. I did see that in the movies, but it was not good at all. I don't remember having the same feeling about for Grease 2 that I did for Grease 1.
Yeah, it was funny too because I think they considered Henry Winkler for Danny Zuko, and he turned it down. And I'm actually looking at some of the trivia on IMDb, and due to a zipper breaking, Olivia Newton-John had to be sewn into the trousers she wears in the last sequence, the carnival ride out with those very tight black pants.
Tight leather pants.
Oh, yeah. You know, also Jeff Conway, Tucker Channing. The only person that was actually a teenager was Dina Minhoff. Is that how you say her name?
Dina Minhoff.
Dina Minhoff, who played, what'd she play? She was
Maraschino.
Yep.
As in Cherry.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Everybody else was in their 20s. A little too old there. Yeah, but it spawned. I mean, the soundtrack was everywhere. Everybody knew the songs. It was just insane. And Scott, you know, what are your memories of Grease as a kid?
Well, for me, I mean, it was two things. Number one, when it came out, which, by the way, Grease and Jaws 2 came out on the same day.
Oof. Amazing.
I guess it went to one movie and guess it went to the other. my sister at the Capitol Theater in Milford, here in Connecticut, my sister and her best friend they took the day off. They called out sick. And my sister and her best friend went to the matinee. And this is back when security at movie theaters was very loosey-goosey. They bought a matinee ticket, saw the movie, went to the bathroom, went back in. Watched it again, went to the bathroom, went back, watched it again, went to the bathroom. They saw it four times that day for the price of one.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's how much she loved Grease. It's her number two favorite movie behind Gone with the Wind. I remember Grease because when we went as a family to see it, I remember it was the same theater, the Capitol Theater in Milford. And halfway through Grease Lightning, while they're seeing Grease Lightning, the film snapped.
Oh.
And my father was pissed because he thought he wasn't going to get refunded on the tickets. All right, typical dad, old Italian father. He's not going to get refunded on the tickets. Turned out they gave us a refund, and we went to another small theater in West Haven like a week later, and we got to see the movie again. So that was pretty cool. But that was one of the first memorable TV movie moments was the film snapping in the middle of Grease Lightning. But, I mean, and I have the soundtrack. I have it on vinyl. I bought the album. That's how much I love it. It's a tremendous movie, tremendous song.
Yeah, I mean the music there. I mean it's just
yeah.
I was actually
It's on my Apple Music.
Mm-hmm.
I play it. Beauty School Dropout, Frankie Avalon, Came Back from the Dead in that movie. Sha-na-na.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Sha-na-na. Great movie. Hickey from Kinnicky is like a Hallmark card when you care enough to send the very best. Hey, pig, I love when you talk dirty.
I was actually in Grease in high school. I was a sophomore. We did it as our musical.
Kinnicky?
No. As you can tell, I don't have a great singing voice, so I never got lead roles. I was in the chorus, but I was actually the understudy to both Duty and Vince Fontaine. Because I could,
Duty, not Ducky. Yeah, Ducky is
Duty.
Pretty
Ducky, yeah, Ducky's pretty in pink. Yeah, if you're gonna insult me, do it right, Criscolo.
hey, Kinnicky, you want a piece of salami? You kidding? If I eat that, I'll smell like you. Tremendous fucking movie. It really is.
Caesar as the coach.
Yes, Joan Blondell, Eve Arden. Those are some legendary, like. Yeah.
Stalker China was like late 50s and she was playing high school.
Sorry, French.
Rizzo.
And the great Rizzo. Eddie Deason, who played a nerd in like every
Eugene. Movie. He never aged either. I think he looks the same. He looked the same like fucking 20 years later.
Yes. Hopelessly Devoted to You actually was not in the play, it was recorded later.
It was added to give, plus it was added to give Olivia Newton-John another single.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And then there was a theory that circulated that Sandy actually drowns at the beach and the rest of the film is a near-death hallucination. And they also claimed that the famous flyaway scene at the end is Sandy's ascent into heaven. That's kind of...
That's morbid.
Out there.
Why does Danny have to die? I did like the car with the glass hood. That was always fucking cool.
All right.
And I always thought Rizzo was hot, so.
Yeah.
I don't care how old she is, John. She could be 100. She was hot in that movie.
you weren't a Patty Simpkins guy?
Simcox.
Simcox, sorry.
Patty Simcox. What about, what's her name? Who was the slut that Craterface was with? With the worst reputation with St. Bernadette.
Chacha Di Gregorio.
Chacha Di Gregorio. With the worst reputation.
At St. Bernadette's.
Oh, God. That's a good movie. That's a good movie. Good awesome. Movie. Good year for movie, 78. Mm-hmm. Good year.
Yeah, looking forward. Guys, we're almost at the end of the 70s. I mean, I know we started in 72, but, you know, we only have one more show to go in the 70s, and then it's on to a new decade. A first for Year in Pop. So I'm glad I'm taking the ride with you guys so far. So
it's been fantastic.
It's been tremendous. So that's going to bring the end to the episode. But before we go, we'll kind of go around and see what's going on. Johnny, what's going on this week in the NFL? Anything else? Three-way dance? What you got coming up?
Yes, the three-way dance just dropped, and it'll be out when this comes out. And this week in the NFL, me and Raj, every week we've been on a good schedule, so we'll keep it going.
All right, Dr. G, we'll see you on the next episode. We'll hopefully get you on other shows here and there when your schedule allows. Mr. Scola, what do you got coming up?
Later this week, myself, Mr. Steve Willey, and Mr. Nate Milton will be doing the next episode of The Main Event. We will recap that wonderful pay-per-view that was Sunday night, the WrestleMania 3 of secondary shows. we'll continue talking about...
This is going to take about 2 hours to go over. So
on PTBN's Watching Paint Dry, Mr. Scola discussed it.
We're going to... yes, we're going to do, we'll recap, we'll continue what's going on with the Wednesday Night Wars, look ahead, pick our best matches, and we'll have our next TNA Classic pay-per-view recap from 2002. Then next Monday, myself and my PIC, Mr. Zero, will be doing the 1990 Royal Rumble. And yes, on that night, Mr. Atherton, we will announce the next tournament topic. Mm-hmm. So, very excited about that. So that's what's coming up.
All right, cool.
And more, of course, more horror pod blasts. The Mummy and the Invisible Man will be coming up within the next week.
Awesome, awesome. As for myself, new episodes of Laugh-In Theater will be coming soon. Actually going to go to the small screen for some Laugh-In Theaters coming up. We're going to look at some great holiday specials. And starting off with It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Excuse me. And I will be joined on that by not just Geek, also Sassy. That's right. Jenny Miranda will be joining me to look at the great classic Peanuts holiday special. It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. Also coming up, a new episode of Great Debate is being recorded next week. And I'll be featuring some guys you guys know very well. The Godfather, Nate Milton, will be coming on and joining me, as well as Mr. Peter Winston. And the Sues, Matt Souza. So a great lineup coming up. You know, lots of Boston accents and comparisons.
That's quite a crew. That's like you know, the bar, the Star Wars.
the most Geisley Cantina episode of Great Debate. Awesome, awesome. Also, look for Pop Goes Movies. Johnny, you and I are going to get together, right? That's right.
I just notified that season 2, we got renewed. Thank you.
Well, that's Laughing Theater.
That's it.
Everything got renewed.
But also, we're going to do Pop Goes Movies. We're going to get together and discuss one of the latest releases.
Oh, of course.
Joker.
Yes. We survived the Joker, yes.
Yes, I survived, you survived. You know, at first I was afraid. Hell, I was even petrified.
I was petrified.
But Johnny, I got you by my side, so we're gonna get through that show. Awesome, awesome, great. So don't forget, check out, like I said, tune into, or Scott said, the Place to Be podcast coming up on October 14th for the reveal of the next Place to Be Nation tournament. It's gonna be a lot of fun. We're glad everybody enjoyed the 80 song tournament, but we're gonna move on and go to a different direction. So check it out. Also, don't forget to check out placetobenation.com. Lots of great content up there. Don't forget to click on our Amazon banner. It'll take you to Amazon.com to do your shopping. Same way you get there is directly, except for you help us out if you do that. Also, don't forget something we don't say enough on our shows. Go on iTunes and rate us. You know, give us a positive rating. It helps us out with our standings, gets us more listeners, more followers, and then we can bring you more content. That's all. So, awesome. And don't forget to check out the wrestling feed and the pop feed. So, for Scott Criscolo, G. Arsenio D'Amato, and Dr. G. George Ribolino, Thank you for joining us here on Year in Pop, and we'll see you in 1979. Take care, everybody.
Oh God.